This is VOA News coming to you by remote. I'm Gene Randall. In Belarus today, masked security agents dragged students off the streets and took them away in vans. This as new protests broke out against President Alexander Lukashenko. It is the fourth straight weekend of unrest since his disputed re-election victory. The Russian TASS news agency quoted the Minsk police as saying that up to 30 people were detained for taking part in unsanctioned demonstrations. Masked men also apprehended students who had gathered at a restaurant in the center of Minsk. Thousands of women later held a separate march through the city, shouting, "Hands off the children," as one of their slogans. Lukashenko has been in power for a quarter century. India and China said today they have agreed to work at reducing tensions along their contested Himalayan border. This came following a Moscow meeting of the defense ministers of the two nuclear-armed Asian giants. Both sides deployed additional forces along the for a clash in June, when 20 Indian soldiers were killed in hand-to-hand fighting. The Moscow discussions were the highest-level face-to-face political contact between India and China since the border situation first flared in May. Defense Ministers Rajnath Singh of India and General Wei Fenghe of China met late Friday on the sidelines of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization meeting in the Russian capital. In a statement, India's defense chief said both countries agree that neither side should take any further action that could either complicate the situation or escalate matters in the border areas. A gas pipeline explosion near a mosque in Bangladesh overnight killed 13 people and injured 30 as the faithful were about to end their prayers. Fire service officials suspect the blast was caused by a gas leak. It occurred just outside the capital, Dhaka. Dozens were rushed to the city's state-run specialized burn and plastic surgery hospital. Reports indicate that those who died included at least one child. Authorities said an accumulation of gas in the mosque likely sparked the tragedy. Authorities have launched an investigation. More news online at voanews.com. This is VOA News. There is continuing fallout over U.S. President Donald Trump's alleged disparagement of American service members who have been killed in action. The Atlantic Monthly magazine, in a story with unnamed sources, said Mr. Trump referred to U.S. fallen buried in France as losers. He also allegedly used the term suckers. Mr. Trump angrily denies all this and says no president has done as much for the military as he has. Mr. Trump's November opponent in his re-election bid, Joe Biden, issued a bitter critique, saying if true, the Atlantic article shows Donald Trump is unfit to be the nation's commander-in-chief. One of the final U.S. job reports before November's voting presented mixed results. Unemployment fell from 10.2 to 8.4%, but the pace of hiring in the country slowed. There were 1.4 million new jobs filled in August, but that was down from 1.7 million the month before. Economists say that points to a sluggish recovery from the damage done by the pandemic. There is a grim prediction from the University of Washington's Health Institute, but are enough Americans listening? The warning that U.S. deaths from the coronavirus could reach 410,000 by the end of the year, more than double the current toll, and that lives lost could reach 3,000 per day in December. The other side of the prediction, COVID-19 fatalities could be reduced by 30% if more Americans wore face masks. But in fact, the use of those coverings appears to be declining. President Trump, meanwhile, is urging people to practice social distancing over the Labor Day weekend to reduce the spread of COVID-19. Health experts have expressed anxieties that ignoring such basics as face coverings over the holiday weekend could have serious consequences. According to Johns Hopkins University, the coronavirus has so far claimed 875,000 lives worldwide, with 26.6 million infections. The top four fatality counts, almost 188,000 here in the U.S., 125,000 in Brazil, 69,000 in India, and 66,000 in Mexico. Combined cases in those four countries, nearly 15 million. Japan's frontrunner to become the country's next prime minister, Yoshihide Suga, says he would like the central bank to continue its ultra-loose monetary policy as the economy struggles with the impact of the pandemic. In a Nikkei newspaper interview that ran today, Suga also said he would consider another economic stimulus package by the end of the year, in his words, to put the pandemic to an end and shift the economy to a new stage. The remarks reinforce expectations that Suga, as prime minister, would continue with many of Shinzo Abe's pro-growth economic policies. The International Atomic Energy Agency says Iran continues to increase its stockpile of enriched uranium in violation of limitations set in the landmark 2015 nuclear deal between Tehran and six world powers. More news online at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Gene Randall, and this is VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotin in Washington, D.C.
We can continue fighting Alpha until we win for the betterment for the people of Guinea. But if we run with him, we are going to make everything he has done legitimate.
Opposition groups in Guinea vowed to prevent President Alpha Conde from seeking a third term in office.
And our own abilities are not considered and catered for. It amounts motion without movement. So we want all of this addressed once and for all. We can only appeal to our critics to ask the stakeholders, government, to do the needful so that we can get back to our work.
Nigerian doctors plan to resume their indefinite strike action beginning Monday.
The government of Tanzania has passed several laws that severely restrict freedom of expression at the risk of criminal prosecution in some cases, like the new online content regulations, which make it a crime to publish online content, in quotes, against the state and public order.
And Human Rights Watch reports an increase in efforts to suppress opposition parties, NGOs, and the media ahead of the October elections. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The leader of Guinea's opposition party, the Liberal Bloc, says other opposition and civil society groups will continue to protest President Alpha Conde's bid to seek a third term. Faya Milimino, who is also a leading member of the opposition coalition, the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, says it appears the president wants to plunge the West African country into chaos with his decision to participate in the upcoming October elections. His remarks follow clashes between opposition protesters and the police in the capital, Conakry, Thursday. This after President Conde officially filed documentation at the Constitutional Court as a presidential candidate in the October polls. Faya Milimino tells me that Guineans and Africans in general are tired of leaders who amend the constitution to remain in power until death. He adds that Guineans will continue to resist efforts by the president to undermine the country's peace and stability with his decision to seek a third term.
It is unfortunate, and it is something that we have been saying for the last 5 years. And people spend time telling us, no, he has no state, he's gonna run. But we knew exactly what he was planning. Many people have been killed, some have been injured. There are people in jail today. It is just unfortunate. It is the kind of Africa we want to see behind. But for this case, we're gonna continue fighting until Alpha Conde leaves office.
But when you keep on protesting, some people fear that the lives of the protesters will be put at risk because security forces might try to stop the protest.
It is very sad. It's something we hardly live with, because every time we protest, we have young people being killed. It's very sad. And everybody feels very, very sorry about it. But here is the thing. We are facing a situation where either we give up and the situation is going to be worse, or we continue fighting to create the environment in which everybody can live free and happy in this country. It is like when the apartheid was in South Africa. We were seeing young people killed by the police officers. They didn't give up because the alternative was the worst. It's exactly the same thing people of Guinea face. And that's why we have to continue.
Are you therefore saying that there would be a series of protests leading up to the October elections to push back against President Alpha Conde's candidacy to contest in the upcoming elections?
I am positive about it. We are planning just that, and we will continue demonstrating to show that Alpha Conde doesn't have any right to run again. Those who don't know the foundation of all this debate. It's like in America, somebody is elected. After his second term, he changed the constitution of America to stand forever. Can you imagine the president of Cameroon? He's in power since 1982. In 1982, Ronald Reagan had only 1 year in office. How many presidents have worked to develop America since then? We have that man in power, and the country is completely destroyed today. That's not the Africa we want to be again.
Is there any opposition alliance ahead of the elections?
The bad part of it is in the opposition, we are already divided. Some have decided to run with Alpha Conde running. Others have decided not to run. So you have two groups already emerging within the opposition. And that situation is going to be very damaging for the opposition to be able to succeed very easily. If we had all decided to continue fighting without running, probably, I am sure, we will be able to win against Alpha Conde. Look, all the international community, the last referendum he organized are not recognized. I have read the statement made by the United States, the United Nations, the European Union, the ECOWAS, and so on and so on. All those countries and all those bodies, no one has recognized those elections. We can continue fighting Alpha until we win for the betterment for the people of Guinea. But if we run with him, we are going to make everything he has done legitimate.
Faye Milimino is the leader of Guinea's opposition party, Liberal Bloc. He spoke with me from the capital, Conakry. The Nigerian Association of Resident Doctors has announced plans to resume its indefinite nationwide strike beginning Monday to pressure the Nigerian government to meet its demands. Dr. Aliyu Sakumba, president of the group, says representatives of the government have so far failed to meet their demands despite repeated promises. Core among their demands, Dr. Sakumba says, is for the administration to ensure the prompt payment of their salaries and for the government to stop security agencies from harassing members. He also says the government has failed to address issues affecting the healthcare system and the welfare of its members despite repeated efforts of the group. The 5,000-member group represents about a third of the physicians in Nigeria. Dr. Sakumba tells me members of the group will continue with the strike until their demands are met.
Well, it's the same old strike demand that we had when we embarked on strike sometimes in June, for which we got promises and the result of considering suspending the strike. The strike was never called off. It was suspended. And following unsuccessful negotiations and meetings and discussions, the association, the Nigerian Association of Resident Doctors, eventually concluded that the suspended strike be resumed. And that is the strike that will be commencing on 7th, that Monday this month.
Are you going on strike again or resuming the strike because your demands were not met despite repeated promises?
Yes, they are resuming the suspended strike. It was suspended to allow for more negotiations and discussions and to give the stakeholders appropriate and ample time to address our concerns. Unfortunately, those were not done, so we are resuming the suspended strike.
I remember you told me you suspended the strike because there were a couple of meetings that were scheduled to engage the stakeholders to resolve your concerns. Why did these engagements fail to materialize or to bear fruit?
Unfortunately, all parties have agreed that our demands are legitimate, but for one reason or the other, I will say for the fact that the government has never considered our concerns and the lives of Nigerians that we care for seriously, they have taken our concerns with kid gloves. And so we are at this point having no choice than to resume our suspended strike. And these issues are no issues that are out of the reach of the government. It borders on issues of like provision of the group life insurance and the payment of death and service benefits to next of kin of our members that have died while on duty. This, I believe, is one demand that the government, if they are sincere and serious, will be able to address without any difficulty. The second issue is the issue of our training. Our program is a time-bound program that requires us to finish in good time. Otherwise, we will be asked to leave the residency training program, and it is time-bound. We have not received funding for the program. We have been clamoring for this since 2017. This is 2023 years of negotiations and meetings to no avail. So these are issues that we believe that in the end, now we may have to just start the indefinite strike, and we may not consider any suspension until these demands are met and met to a logical conclusion.
How long do you think this is going to last? Because your group came under a lot of criticism after you launched the strike.
Well, as you know, the strike is an indefinite strike, and it will last as long as the government wants it to last. If they want it to last for a week, fine, that's up to them. They want it to last for a year, that's up to them. For us, it's an indefinite strike, and it will last until our demands are met.
What do you say to your critics who are of the view that you should consider the lives of patients who depend on you for survival, and that embarking on this strike, despite what they described as the political situation in the country, you should put their lives first before engaging in an indefinite strike? How do you respond to that?
It is not of that the responsibility of caring and ensuring that the lives of Nigerians and including the providers of healthcare services lies with the government. The government have chosen at this point and have demonstrated that to a point of no doubt that they cannot, they don't care anymore for Nigerians, especially those who need healthcare services. So we are only reacting to this unfortunate situation of the government nonchalant attitude towards the health and well-being of Nigerians. We cannot continue to offer care if our own welfare and our own well-being and our own abilities are not considered and catered for. It amounts motion without movement. So we want all of this addressed once and for all. We can only appeal to our critics to ask the stakeholders, the government, to do the needful so that we can get back to our work.
Dr. Aliu Sakumba is president of the Nigerian Association of Resident Doctors. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. The Tanzanian government has rejected a Human Rights Watch report suggesting that the authorities have intensified the repression of opposition groups, the media, and NGOs ahead of the October elections. In its report, the rights group stated that the government has arrested 17 critics and opposition supporters. It also documented instances where a local rights group was suspended, the license of another group was cancelled, and some groups were prevented from monitoring the upcoming elections. The report comes after opposition groups expressed worry that the elections could be rigged in favor of incumbent President John Magufuli and his governing party, the Chama Cha Mapinduzi, or CCM. Officials of the National Electoral Commission have rejected the accusations as false and without merit. To learn more about the latest report on Tanzania, I reached Oriem Nyeko, Human Rights Watch Africa researcher.
So the major concern in Tanzania at the moment is that the government has really stepped up its repression of its critics with the arrest of several opposition members and the increased restrictions on the media and NGOs that it has placed. It's obviously not new and has been happening for several years over there, but it's really increased in the last few months and weeks as the elections have drawn closer and closer. You know, this really raises questions about how free and fair the environment for the elections can be. In terms of violence, it's the Tanzanian government's obligation to prevent that from taking place, and if it does, to hold any perpetrators accountable.
Officials of the government denied the report of Human Rights Watch that violence has increased or suppression of opponents have increased in the run-up to the election. What is your response to that?
Well, it's clear that the authorities in Tanzania have taken restrictive steps. At least 17 government critics and opposition members have been arrested, and the government has just recently passed regulations that severely restrict how people can communicate online and also how the media in Tanzania can operate. They've also suspended NGOs and blocked key organizations from observing the elections. All of this is public information, and it's all part of a very troubling trend. So I think the government should focus on reversing these trends in order to make the space free and fair.
Ori, I'm talking about NGOs being limited or being prevented to monitor elections. The permanent secretary in the Ministry of Constitutional and Legal Affairs, Professor Sifuni Nchomi, said the claims are not relevant vis-a-vis the current situation. He said, and I quote, "Our country is on the right track and we are not experiencing such issues. If someone says so, it is up to them," unquote. Your response to that?
In terms of NGOs being blocked from observing the elections, this is very important to note because the groups that were excluded from this have done this work historically in Tanzania, including during the 2015 elections, and they've basically played the role that NGOs are supposed to do in any country, which is to provide alternative and independent reporting on election processes. I can't stress enough how important it is that there is an open space for not only NGOs, but the media and the opposition to ensure that free and fair elections take place. Unfortunately, that's just not the case in Tanzania, based on the several cases we have documented.
With the documented issues that you have in your report, do you see that affecting the conduct of the elections or how prospective voters react to activities leading up to the election?
When we talk about free and fair elections, in addition to election day itself, we're talking about the environment leading up to it and how the public is informed and engaged with during that period. So if journalists, for example, are afraid to report stories that paint the government or the ruling party in a negative light, or NGOs are afraid to make reports that are critical of the government because they're afraid that their organization or their newspaper will be shut down, which is something that many journalists and NGO workers have told us is a real fear for themselves in Tanzania, then that takes away from the public's right to access balanced and credible information, which would then possibly inform how they would and could vote, which raises concerns.
Oriem, officials of the government are on record to have said that those who flout the country's laws will be dealt with, irrespective of whether they are journalists or not. And that some of these issues that you have compiled, these journalists flouted the country's laws, and that is why they were punished. How do you respond to that?
I think this question has to be tackled on a case-by-case basis, of course. People are arrested for different reasons. But there's several examples of people being arrested and served with trumped up charges simply because they are government critics in Tanzania. A key example being Erica Bendera, a journalist who was arrested last year after he critiqued Tanzanian politics in his writing. It also has to be pointed out that the government of Tanzania has passed several laws that severely restrict freedom of expression at the risk of criminal prosecution in some cases, like the new online content regulations, which make it a crime to publish online content, in quotes, against the state and public order, or even content which calls for demonstrations. So when the authorities arrest people for doing those things, it really points to repression rather than simply enforcing the law.
Oriem Nyeko is Human Rights Watch Africa researcher. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Meanwhile, 10 foreign missions in Tanzania are wishing Tanzania a peaceful campaign leading up to the elections in October. In a joint statement, the countries including Canada, Germany, Finland, Norway, Sweden, and Switzerland express hope that the country will keep its pledge to ensure the elections are free and fair. But opposition groups including Chadema and ACT Wazalendo have expressed concern that the elections could be rigged in favor of the ruling party, the CCM. This after members of their party were disqualified from competing in parliamentary and local council elections following a challenge by the CCM. But officials of the National Electoral Commission have rejected accusations, saying they are meeting all stakeholders, including the political parties, to address their concerns before the polls. For the latest political development, I reached Hamduni Marcel, a political analyst, and began by asking him about the presidential candidates drawing the most crowds in the campaign ahead of the October polls.
And actually, as far as I can see now, Tundu Lissu and the present president, Mr. John Pombe Magufuli, seem to be pulling a big crowd, to be sincere. And even that Pumba hasn't yet started their campaign, but Bernard Membe, who was the Secretary of State by that time, he's also drawing some people. But I think that Tundu Lissu himself, as a representative of Chadema for presidents, and President John Magufuli seem to be pulling a big crowd at the time. But we are still waiting for Professor Ibrahim Lipumba, who will start his campaign on 7th of this month. And from that time, I think we shall see who is a big crowd puller.
So far, how are Tanzanians reacting to the fact that opposition groups are saying some of their members or their representatives will be prevented from contesting in the elections and will allow the CCM or the Chama Chama Pinduzi party to be dominant in parliament?
This seems to be because already CCM has almost 20 members of parliament who have partner polls, and this is causing a lot of questions, to be sincere. Some other people think that the electoral committee is playing some rough games, something like that. But it seems that this time it will be a big tussle between the ruling party and some other parties, and I mean opposition parties like Chadema and CUF. These two parties seem to be strong against CCM. But of course, CCM will emerge a winner because it has a government support for a long time, and as everybody knows that there was a political ban for other political parties to participate in political activities all around about 5 years ago. But now they are allowed. But I don't think they can cause some big things to business here, because they'll be dealing with some a lot of things at a time. And at this time, actually, people seem to be knowing a lot of things, and they seem to be supporting opposition parties. And that's what I can see.
Hamduni, yes? Do you think the elections will be free, fair, and credible? And is it what you are hearing on the ground from the people in Tanzania? Because previous elections, a lot of opposition people say that the elections were rigged in favor of the CCM. Now, do you think this year's elections will be transparent and credible?
I can't be very much sure, but as we have started, maybe it can be, and it could be going well. No, nobody knows, but this will depend on the electoral committee. But a lot of people, and a great number of people, that does not believe have not had trust to the electoral committee. But as far as I can see, I think it's going to be maybe we can succeed this time to have a fair election. That is beginning to be seen in this. This time we are gone, but I don't believe this will take long before changing. Some other people think that if CCM seem to be losing or to be overpowered by the opposition, maybe things may change at any time. But if CCM will continue to have an upper hand of the campaign against the opposition, maybe things could be going well.
Well, do you think Chadema's presidential candidate Tundu Lissu can defeat incumbent President John Magufuli, looking at the situation on the ground at the moment?
That is quite impossible, to be sincere, because, you know, Tundu Lissu was out of the politics for a long time, about 3 years ago, and Magufuli was active, and as a president, has got a lot of time to do a lot of things, actually, which is convincing people. And Magufuli is still very famous, and he's collecting a lot of people that are pulling a big crowd to listen to him. And, you know, these people are commanding a respect of the people, especially those from the rural areas. But as far as they can see, Tundu Lissu could do some harm to the strong laws of the old system, but he cannot easily win. Actually, he can't win.
Hamduni Marcel is a Tanzanian political analyst. He spoke with me from the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. And you are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, a deputy president of the Ugandan Opposition National Unity Platform, or NUP, says his group has the political momentum to propel the party to victory in next year's general election. Parliamentarian Mathias Mpuuga, however, expressed concern that the credibility of the elections could be compromised. He says his party will continue to engage with the Electoral Commission to address their concerns ahead of the elections. Political analysts say the presidential candidate for the NUP, the popular parliamentarian Robert Kyagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine, is generating a lot of support among the youth. They say their support brightens his prospect as well as that of his party at the polls. But supporters of the governing party, the National Resistance Movement, or NRM, say incumbent President Yoweri Museveni is unbeatable. They maintain that the NRM will continue to maintain its dominance in parliament. Parliamentarian Mathias Mpuuga tells me that his party's momentum is visible and appears to be a great concern for the ruling party before the elections.
The momentum is not accidental. Part of it is sheer hard work and the preparation by the NUP team across the country. It's taken us the last 2 or so years to try and buttress our view of how the country should run after Mr. Museveni 35 years. And our message seems to be resonating that we want to reconstruct a new Uganda premised on a new thinking, a new approach, a free and fair system where everybody can be proudly a part of Uganda and be served by Uganda. Secondly, we have an unavoidable demographic dividend in Uganda. That Uganda is the beehive of younger people that constitute 75% of the population. These young people are yearning to see a new and fresh Uganda where their ideas, their aspirations can be respected and be part of the national politics and policy.
Well, Mathias, some people are expressing concern that a recent development at the National Electoral Commission is a concern that could possibly undermine next year's elections. What is your group's stance?
The Electoral Commission over the years has been a center of concern, and it has come off as a partisan entity. We have had court rulings, and they have all indicted the partisan conduct of the Electoral Commission. We have started engaging the Electoral Commission. We've had meetings, and we have expressed our misgivings with them, given their history, and we are demanding reassurances from them. Not because we expect so much from them, but our thinking is that regime change in Uganda will be a people power driven change, that this election can only be a platform for the people to reject institutions, entities, individuals, clubs, and all manner of groupings that have made it impossible for change to occur democratically, including the Electoral Commission. That has not stopped us from engaging them to make sure that whatever that we can use to leverage their power and ensure that the little space available is fully exploited to our advantage. But we are not oblivious of their nature of partisanship and lack of neutrality. But we are not going to sit back and wait for them to declare their independence, because they will never do it anyway.
Are you pleased with the feedback you are getting from the Electoral Commission as it prepares for next year's election so far?
I am reluctant to state that their feedback is satisfactory. It remains equivocal and leaves gaps to explain as to their level of preparedness. We have had what I could call a rehearsal, a form of dry run, in the recently concluded special interest groups elections. And we could see obvious gaps. It's been a botched up election in some parts of the country. They talk commission officials. Some of the commission officials in the countryside actually work as regime operators, and they do not only disenfranchise so many voters in these elections, they actually connived in frustrating outcomes of elections. So we have had to bring this to their attention. We are waiting to see how they are going to treat their officials that we have reported as unable to conduct a free and fair process, which we expect of them. So I can state without fear of contradiction that their response is yet to yield the kind of satisfaction we expect from a neutral body.
From what you are saying, are you concluding that the elections next year might not necessarily be free or transparent?
There's a choreography by the regime to frustrate the opposition through stealing election the legislature, and after, at the end of the stealing, they make it appear the opposition is not able to organize. We are alive to all these challenges, and for us, every activity is additive. We believe that through mobilizing the people to vote, we are able to summon the kind of momentum that we desire to finally reach the tipping balance in which the regime will have no choice but to pack and go. We are students of other regimes that are foreign after purported victories by margins bigger than the regime in Kampala has done over the years. So it remains an opportunity to rally the country, to realize that we cannot have the luxury of putting up with stolen elections over time. And therefore, we look at an electoral cycle as a legitimate opportunity through which we can do political mobilization across the country.
Parliamentarian Mathias Mpuuga is a deputy president of the Ugandan Opposition National Unity Platform, NLP. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. Malawi's president Lazarus Chakwera has announced plans to pull the country out of poverty, which he blamed on past governments. Chakwera proposed a series of reforms in his first State of the Nation address since being elected in June. For VOA, Lamek Masina reports from the Malawian commercial capital, Blantyre.
In his address to Parliament Friday, which ran more than an hour, President Lazarus Chakwera dismissed the notion that Malawi is a poor country.
You may have heard it said that Malawi is a poor country, but we must reject this lie. Surely, my country, with $85 million in gold exported to the Middle East every year, is not poor. My country, with a freshwater lake and multiple rivers capable of generating $100 million a year in revenue, is not poor.
Chakwera said the poverty which Malawi is renowned, however, is man-made.
Ours is a country stripped of its God-given wealth and potential by syndicates of people in the public sector who exploit decades of bad government policies and practices to enrich themselves at the expense of Malawians. In short, the poverty of our people is man-made, which means it can and must be unmade.
President Chakwera announced several reforms in various sectors, including three arms of government, the executive, judiciary, and legislature.
To reform the executive, we have embarked on a full-scale orientation of the public sector to the pillars of my Super High Five agenda: servant leadership, uniting Malawi, prospering together, ending corruption, and the rule of law. This will happen across the public sector over the next year.
In the agriculture sector, a lifeline in Malawi's economy, Chakwera announced the start of an affordable inputs program in which 4.3 million smallholder farmers will receive subsidized seeds and fertilizers. He said this will tremendously improve the level of productivity in the sector, which currently contributes 30% of the country's gross domestic product. Sherif Kaisi is a political science lecturer at Blantyre International University. He says it's time for President Chakwera to walk the talk.
If he's to live by his words, it means now it's time for work. No more promises. Malawians want to see 1 million jobs, want to see universal subsidy of fertilizer, want to see trimming down of the costs of the passport. Those things which were already promised, and now they just live on those promises.
Bechani Cheleni, an economics lecturer at the University of Malawi, said Chakwera's speech was inspiring.
Well, the speech is it's giving some hope in the sense that the president has been able to explain to us why the economy is behaving as it is behaving now and what are the solutions. And because there are solutions, one would say that, yes, indeed, I think there's some hope that can come on the way.
Chelen says eyes are now on Chakwera's national budget, which his finance minister is expected to deliver during the sitting of parliament that begins Monday. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
The UN Refugee Agency warns that renewed violence and tensions in the Democratic Republic of Congo's Kasai region could trigger a new wave of mass displacement. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
More than 24,000 people in the Kasai region have fled violent attacks and gross human rights atrocities in the past month. The UN Refugee Agency says people have continued to flee even after a period of uneasy calm. The UNHCR says conflicts related to land disputes and resources, as well as confrontations among different ethnic groups, authorities, and militias, have triggered this recent displacement. The agency is calling for a renewed focus on peace and a lessening of tensions. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balach tells VOA efforts to maintain peace need to be redoubled to prevent this explosive situation from getting completely out of hand.
The situation has been fragile. Tensions were there, but this is kind of a new spark, which could bring in another massive displacement in a country that has already seen millions of people being displaced in the other parts of the country, but also in the Kasai regions as well.
In 2017, violence in the Kasai region displaced 1.4 million people within the Democratic Republic of Congo and prompted some 35,000 refugees to flee to neighboring Angola in search of safety. Balart says the majority of those fleeing the current wave of violence are seeking refuge on the provincial border areas of Demba region in Kasai Central and Mweka region in the Kasai.
The newly displaced report killings, rape, torture, looting, and burning of the homes in the recent weeks. Dozens of people have arrived with injuries. There are many children, women, and elderly among the newly displaced.
Spokesman Balach says UNHCR staff on the ground are helping the survivors of sexual violence and referring them for medical care and psychosocial support. He says the agency is distributing relief items, including plastic sheeting, blankets, soap, and cooking kits to more than 4,000 people. He says thousands of displaced also have received shelter kits and cash to buy food and meet other urgent needs. However, he notes much more aid is needed, which his agency is unable to provide because of a lack of money. He says he hopes the international community will support the UNHCR's humanitarian operation so it can respond to the essential needs of displaced Congolese in the region. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
ukipata nafasi tukumbukane. Nitalipa boda boda, achana mwendo kasi usijivane bane. Aha. Ewe binti maringo, sijui wanisikia. Pendo lako nicheze bingo, wenda nikajishindia. Mwezako bado nko singo, pendo limenichachia. Uwe suka niwe tingo, nyoyo iwe abiria. Nafsi unainyomonyeza, na isi la moyo shambulio. Nifanye chipsi chombeza, yapo mionje wate mwazio. Benzi linanilegeza, sonona sonona. Eti, lini utapata nafasi, sonona sonona. Ope mioyo, nambie basi, sonona sonona. Sika karakasi, sonona, sonona. Mwaga wino, wakalamu ya penzi langu. Chimba shimo, unizike kabla ya siku yangu.
Kulwa mukwano kwa nakiuka, defiringa ngaya tuka. baby, show them. Me like to feel your body like a plate.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, Managing Editor Shaka Saleh, Reporter Douglas Impuga, and Producer Saida Hamdoun, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, in a herd of cattle, it does not matter which is ahead. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.